Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlom. If you've paid any attention at all to the story of Chinook salmon runs on the Pacific coast of the West, you know they're having a difficult time due to dams, overfishing, water management, climate change, and habitat degradation. But there is hope on the horizon, and we want to shine a light on that. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by two scientists, Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rotnam, from the NGO River Partners, based in Chico, California, to talk about their work on the Sacramento River to help improve conditions for these indicator species. Their cutting-edge restoration work is grounded in science and is being supported by a variety of stakeholders to try and ensure that salmon can continue their epic migrations from the upper parts of the river system to the San Francisco Bay and out to the Pacific Ocean. Our producer, Matt Fidler, also joined the scientists on site at one of the restoration sites near Chico to see and hear firsthand what's being done to enhance these salmon runs. But first, let's get a little better understanding of what Chinook salmon are confronting in the 21st century as they try to continue the migrations from the foothill spawning areas to the Pacific Ocean that have been going on for millennia. Our guest is fish biologist John Hannon from the United States Department of Reclamation. John Hannon, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, we'd like you to give us, if you will, a little Chinook salmon 101 to learn more about these fish that we are so concerned about that are having such difficult times. Walk us through the life cycle of Chinook salmon and the different runs that there are. There's different runs during the year. Take us through their life cycles, though, from beginning to end.
Sounds good. Chinook salmon 101. So we have five species of Pacific salmon on the coast here. Chinook is the biggest one and the only one we have in the Sacramento River, although a few stray in now and then from other places. So in the Sacramento River, we have four runs, which are based on the time that they come up the river. A run is like a group of fish that head up the river at the same time. So we have a fall run, which is the biggest run, which people fish for generally, comes up the river in the fall as adults. So I'll just go through their life cycle. So they come up the river in the, you know, like August, September timeframe, Sacramento River, they spawn. And like the October, November timeframe, they lay their eggs in the gravel, primarily like Redding to Red Bluff area. The eggs are in the gravel for 3 months approximately in the Sac River. And they come out of the gravel when they're ready. They're called alevins when they come out. And some of them hang out right where they came out of the gravel, and some move downstream right away. But they feed in the river for a while. The ones that stay right there, you know, they need calm water on the edges. Generally, vegetation is good for them and need a place to hang out and eat and grow before they head out to the ocean. Most of the run actually makes it out through the Golden Gate, probably at 3 months old, about 3 to 4 inch long little fish that head out into the ocean. And so for the fall run, that would be in March through May into June kind of thing. And hopefully when they get to the ocean, there's lots of little krill, small crustaceans, small things that they can eat. Some years there is, some years there isn't. But when there is, they grow really quickly. Most of them stay 2 years in the Central Valley out there. Some stay up to 5 or maybe even 6, but most of ours stay out for 2 years and then come back as adults and do the same thing again. So that's the fall run. We have three other runs, a spring run, a winter run, which comes up in the wintertime, like December through April, the winter run are coming up. And then the late fall run, November, December kind of thing, and then spawn in the kind of springtime. And they all do the same life cycle kind of thing as the fall run.
And that winter run is the most endangered, right?
It is. They're the only ones that's listed as endangered in the Central Valley. Spring run are threatened. And then we have steelhead that are also salmonid, and they're threatened as well.
There's been so much going on in the news about the collapse of the Chinook salmon fishery. And, you know, it's closed to fishing here on the Sacramento River, which is not exactly great for, you know, people that used to make a living as fishing guides and people that enjoyed catching the salmon and all that. But most importantly, it's really bad for the salmon. And, you know, they're an indicator of the health of the watershed and the ecosystem. What do you think are some of the real key problems that have led to this?
Lots of things. Each stage of the life cycle, we've got challenges, I guess. So the least difficult thing is for the adults swimming up the river. They can generally swim up the river okay and make it to where they want to go. Sometimes the water's a little bit too warm for them, though, and especially for the eggs. The eggs need like mid-50s to low 50 degrees Fahrenheit water. So that's a challenge on the Sacramento River and a lot of rivers, especially for the winter run, to save that cold water in the reservoir and let it out in the summer, which is when the winter run eggs are in the gravel. So that's a challenge, especially in the dry years. When the juveniles come out, they've got to have a place to go. A lot of the banks and stuff have been, like vegetation has been removed, and it's not as good as it used to be as far as little slow-moving areas with vegetation for juveniles to hang out and grow. So that's a challenge. That's a thing we're trying to address with habitat projects. When they head down the river, it seems like that's kind of maybe one of the biggest bottlenecks. A lot of our models that we've developed based on studies show that like a very low percentage makes it down the river, even in wet years. There's a lot of new species that prey on the fish. That's an issue for them to make it out to the ocean. Making it to the ocean is an issue for them. And now, in different years, you know, there are different amounts of food in the ocean. We've had multiple years with kind of low ocean productivity. When the salmon make it to the ocean, it could be good or it could be not a lot for them to eat. When it's not a lot for them to eat, they don't do as well. And more recently, they're learning that even when there's a lot for them to eat, there's a lot of anchovies, and they have a chemical that causes thiamine deficiency in the fish. So when they feed on anchovies, they have low thiamine or vitamin B1, and they come back to the river if they make it back and don't do well as adults. So yeah, all through the life stages, there's a lot of challenges.
One of the things we've noticed on the Klamath River with the dam removal is it really didn't take long at all for the salmon to start returning into the river system up there. I'm wondering, how long do you think it will take before we start to see, you know, some results from all this work?
Well, the fish that are there use the projects like immediately. You know, the rearing life stages is the thing that these projects are focused on. And you know, if the adults do well, if the eggs come out of the gravel well, then that the habitat's there and the fish are going to use it. They use it like the first year. Some of the areas we plant and takes a little bit to grow up and they get better over time, but they'll use it immediately. You know, we're not addressing like the out-migration survival, which is a big thing. So we're doing what we can with the habitat. But it takes a whole life cycle approach. We got to address every phase. And pretty much when we address one phase, the fish will respond, I think, immediately, basically.
Well, before I let you go, just tell us a little bit about, you know, what is the role that the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation in overseeing fisheries like this and like your job?
So my job, I don't deal with the actual populations. I deal with the habitat mainly. So we have funding that comes largely from payments for water and power that we provide to people, and we work with them to construct habitat projects, improve the habitat. So that's where I'm working with River Partners. And we also, of course, manage Shasta and Keswick Dams, so work on teams to, you know, do the best job we can, balancing water deliveries and cold water pool and you know, flows out of the dam and water temperatures out of the dam. It's kind of a year-round thing, balancing everything with that.
Well, it's definitely a complex problem. And thanks for sharing your insights into the lives of Chinook salmon and explaining some of the challenges they face. And of course, for your work with River Partners to try to improve some of this habitat to make the river a healthier place for these anadromous fish. Thank you, John, for joining us.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks for that, Sam. An overview from fish biologist John Hannon from the U.S. Department of Reclamation. Now let's turn our attention to some of the important restoration work being done on the Sacramento River by River Partners, a non-government organization based in Chico, California. Our guests are Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rotnam. Michael is River Partners Associate Director of Restoration Science, and Jennifer is a Senior Restoration Ecologist and Project Manager for the group. Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rotnam, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you for having us, Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Before we dive into the topic at hand of restoration of side channels for salmon habitat, I'd like to know a little bit about you two and how you got to be where you're at. So let's start with you, Jennifer. Tell us about how you came to work for River Partners and what your journey was like briefly.
I came to River Partners after living in the Sacramento Valley for the last several decades. I feel very passionate about the Sacramento River, which runs through the heart of California, and passionate about restoring habitat to that ecosystem for the benefit of both people and wildlife.
And Michael, what about you?
About 20 years ago, I was doing research on how songbirds respond to habitat restoration projects. And then I met River Partners people and, you know, I saw them doing these hundreds and even thousands of acres of projects. And it was just this really, really great group of like-minded people who were, you know, sort of crazy and audacious enough to think that they could change the world. And so I said, I want to go work there for the rest of my career. And I've now been here for about 18 years.
Well, we're going to talk about a very specific project that's underway on several parts of the Sacramento River. But let's talk a bit about the Sacramento River now, as it is now under the dominion of human beings. It's a very channelized river, isn't it? Could you just tell us what that really means, Michael?
Yeah, it is. So when the dams were built, you know, up in the Redding area, you know, that interrupts the flow of sediment downstream, which is essentially what makes the river, you know, water and movement of sediment across the floodplain. And so the result that happened is it totally changed the flooding dynamics. It changed the timing of when those flows happened. And what happens when you do that to a river is it goes from this braided, you know, very complex ecosystem down into sort of a one that just sort of carves a deeper and deeper channel, you know, into the floodplain and no longer moves around like rivers like to do. And you see this all over the world, wherever dams are built, this is the result.
So if we could go back in time, say 200 years, what would the Sacramento River look like compared to now?
Well, right now, you know, that it's just starting to rain. So you would get flows that maybe a month ago, the Sacramento River could have been very tiny. You might have been able to just walk across it, you know, but now we're getting some rain and those flows would sort of begin to pick up. And if we got enough rain, you know, the Central Valley would become a lake. You know, down in Sacramento, you could stand at the top of one of those skyscrapers and probably not be able to see, you know, the end of the water to the north or to the south. And this was just sort of the, you know, the annual event that happened in the Sacramento Valley. And, you know, all of our modifications obviously have changed that. And now we have communities built in where these lakes used to be. And so there is no going back in time, but we can still, there's lots of things that we can do to improve the conditions for fish and wildlife.
Let's talk about what we can do, what you're working on, which is called side channel restoration. What does that exactly mean?
As Michael said, prior to dams and other alterations, braided river channels were the norm. And side channel restoration is essentially reestablishing those smaller channels within the river system that branch off from the main stem of the river. And these channels provide critical habitat for fish, particularly juvenile salmon, by offering them sources of food, diverse water flow conditions, deep pools, shade, and cover from predators.
That's a great description. The only thing that I would add is that the term side channel is sort of a catch-all. You know, Jen described, you know, very, you know, eloquently the image of what one of these things might look like. But depending on where you're at in the system, some of those things might be perennial, some of them might only be seasonal. You know, so there's lots of different, you know, sort of visions that would fall under this term side channel. And that's one of the reasons that I sort of prefer to use the term floodplain reconnection. You know, we're just reconnecting, you know, lost areas of the floodplain throughout the system.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about a watershed for the Sacramento River. You know, that begins with springs up around Mount Shasta. And so if you look at a watershed and take into account the headwaters and what that environment's like and what's going on there, all the way down to that floodplain and down to the delta and out to the ocean, you know, that's a fully connected watershed. And we tend to just think of it compartmentally, like, okay, well, I've got this little part of the river and I got this little part of the river, and then there's the upper Sacramento River. But it is important to think of these as whole watersheds.
Yeah, and salmon are the being that connects all of those different parts of the watershed. They're born, you know, some of the winter run especially are born very high in the watershed. You know, they migrate slowly out to sea where they put on 99% of their weight. And then they bring all of that energy that they've gathered out in the ocean and they travel right back up to the top of the watershed. And when they after they breed, they die. And all of that, you know, all of those calories, all of that energy goes into, you know, the habitat surrounding them. And that's really the key, you know, to those habitats. So when we're looking at a watershed, we're also looking at, you know, sort of the, you know, another image of a salmon.
I wanted to just add one thing, and that is to bring into perspective that when we're talking about the Sacramento River in particular, we're talking about the largest river in California. So it's 384 miles long, and the watershed drains about 27,000 square miles. So it's a lot of distance for the salmon to cover and a lot of territory that was historically part of their life cycle.
Let's take a short break, but stay with us. When we return, we'll continue our look at the restoration work being done to aid salmon populations on the Sacramento River with River Partner scientists Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rotnam. I'm Dave Schloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot. Let's continue our look at the salmon habitat restoration work being done on the Sacramento River in Northern California with scientists Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rotnam from River Partners, based right here in our home base, Chico, California.
Well, the good news about salmon is that they are an incredibly resilient species. I mean, just the fact that they're still here after all of our modifications is a good sign. However, you know, climate change has been identified as one of the primary stressors on the species. And so what we're trying to do with floodplain reconnection is to, you know, build that buffer that's going to help them more successfully navigate the changes that are coming with climate change. And those changes include basically altering the hydrology even further than it's already been altered. So if we can give them more safe places to find refuge, it'll help them, you know, face the challenges that are coming.
I spend a lot of time on the river myself as a fly fisherman. And so I'm constantly observing what's going on with the river. And it was interesting. I was in the area around Battle Creek a couple of weeks ago and saw some salmon, which was encouraging. But I also saw lots of, you know, empty salmon reds, which are where the gravel beds where they go and burrow in and they lay their eggs. So are we seeing, you know, are you noticing any kind of return numbers this year that are more encouraging, or have you been monitoring that at all?
It's really not encouraging, you know, from what I've witnessed, and the fisheries ecologists who are out there counting the fish are counting. I can't really say that it's going to be a bad year, but, you know, all indicators are that it's not going to be great. You know, that said, you mentioned Battle Creek, and Battle Creek is sort of the heart of this whole story around salmon recovery. You know, if the state of California is ever going to find water security, it's going to be through salmon recovery. Those two things are completely linked. And if there's going to be salmon recovery, it's going to happen with winter run on Battle Creek. And so when you say that you're in that area and you're not seeing a lot of activity, you know, that's of concern probably a little bit more than if you said that you're at Clear Creek or you know, Mill Creek or one of these other lesser used streams.
Well, I did see some salmon, so that was encouraging. But, you know, I also saw, you know, lots of empty reds where normally there would just be a lot of salmon in there. So could you explain what you mean by how those two things are connected, water security and salmon, you know, how those are linked?
Sure. So as long as there are endangered species that control our ability to move water throughout the state, then we don't have full control. You know, the federal Fish and Wildlife agencies have control. And so by restoring salmon, what that will do is it'll give us the opportunity to use water in a smarter way, especially in the face of climate change. And some of those ways that we're going to have to learn to be smart about water, we'll learn by actually doing the work of salmon recovery. But at the end of the day, as long as there are species that dictate water policy, then California does not have a safe water supply.
And one of the things that's really interesting about these floodplain reconnections, as you like to talk about them, there's one that I observe here in Red Bluff, where I live, where it's a slough and it's been kind of dredged out and reformed to make water be able to flow through there most of the time and create habitat for salmon. And I heard, you know, one fishing guide complaining that, you know, the salmon don't go in there. They're not going to go in there and lay and spawn or do anything. So that's just a waste of money and stupid. And then I talked to a fisheries biologist who probably knows a bit more. And he said, no, that guy's missing the point. Those places, what they are, those are gas stations for the fish. That's where they can stop and they can rest and get a snack and, you know, charge their batteries up a little bit to move on. And I thought that was an interesting analogy.
Yeah, it is. And it's spot on. You know, as juvenile fish, you know, they're going from this very tiny creature that lives in the gravel to a fingerling size that goes out underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, as they move downstream, their ability to grow, if they stay in the main channel, is very small. There's not very much food. There's not very many hiding places. There's tons of things that are trying to eat them. You know, they're just racing to get out of there, you know, to move on to the next place. And that's not a healthy way for a salmon to live. If you provide them, you know, these side channel, you know, off channel habitats where they can really find good cover, find tons of food. The amount of food in there is crazy. It gives them such a better chance to actually make it out to the Golden Gate and out into the ocean. And ultimately that is what determines, you know, how many fish come back. And so, after these projects have been completed, you know, people go out there with cameras and they're diving and they're doing surveys and you're seeing fish, you know, the next day. Like you open up a new side channel and there are juvenile salmon in there the next day. It's amazing. Wow. You know, just how cued they are into this, you know, just their life history. That's where they want to be. And so when you open it up, they go there.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of these specific projects. Jennifer, can you tell us how many of these projects is River Partner working on right now in the Sacramento River, and where are they?
So River Partners has 8 projects along 130 miles of the Sacramento River, from Redding in the north down to Chico in the middle of this stretch of the river, and then ending downstream in the city of Colusa to the south.
And could you, you know, talk about some of the different kinds of places that we're talking about? Because like, I know the river and, you know, what the river looks like, say, here a mile from me and my house is very different than it looks, you know, 20, 30 miles downstream. So every part of the river is so different. Could you talk about some of the different kinds of habitat you're working on?
Sure. In the northern stretches of the Sacramento River, the river is largely unconfined. And so there's more influence from the tributaries, more influence with flow and water that reaches the main stem of the channel. As we move further down the channel to the south towards Colusa, the channel becomes more confined by the levee system, which has been built to protect the surrounding farmlands and communities from flood events.
Okay, let's talk about specifically what is exactly that you do. Pick one of these sites and tell us what you do in order to make that better habitat for the fish.
If I was going to choose one, I would choose the Indian Fisheries Project, which is located in Chico, California. It's part of the Bidwell Sacramento State Park and also the Sacramento River Wildlife Area, which is managed by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. It's currently a large oxbow lake that fills with water seasonally. And Oxbow Lake is essentially the remains of a bend in the river where the river has meandered away, leaving a lake that's no longer connected to the river. So this particular project is working with the Machupta and other key partners on a restoration plan to reconnect the Oxbow Lake and another small remnant channel with the Sacramento River. And it creates about 2 miles of rearing habitat for juvenile salmon and reconnects approximately 93 acres of floodplain habitat with the river.
Yeah, so Dave, if you were to go out there, you know, when this project is being implemented, you would see bulldozers in the river, you would see, you know, big backhoes, you would see all this heavy equipment. And our tribal partners with the Yurok have been doing this stuff for decades on the Trinity River, and they're going to be helping us in this area as well. And so the actual construction of these things, you know, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of people, and it happens very quickly. You know, it could happen in, you know, just in a couple of weeks. And then after that, there is, you know, the opportunity to go in and replant any areas that were disturbed by the heavy equipment. And then we just kind of back off and see what the river does and see how it reacts and begin that monitoring phase.
And when you talk about replanting, maybe could you address that a bit? Because it's important what kind of plants you actually put in there.
Absolutely. And this is sort of River Partner sweet spot. You know, we've been reforesting floodplains for 25 years and have planted, you know, 4 million trees or something like that. I'd have to check our latest numbers. But in these projects, it's all stuff that grows very, you know, with its feet very wet because these are, you know, very low-lying areas. And so it's different species of willows. There's several different rush species and sedge species and native grasses. We provide sort of a pollinator mix that provides floral resources throughout the year. There's some milkweed, you know, for monarch butterflies. So these projects are great for other species besides just salmon. However, the funding comes through, you know, sort of salmon partnerships. And so that's why we end up, you know, talking so much about them.
But it does have benefits for all kinds of living things in that river system because it is an ecosystem.
Exactly. And it has one of the most important, you know, members of that ecosystem is the community, the people who live there. And these projects also, you know, open up areas for the public to go out and have access to our rivers, to have access to shade and bird watching and photography and kayaking, whatever it is that they want. And that, you know, that's another sort of untold part of the story is that you cannot have a successful project if the community does not feel invested when we as River Partners walk away from it. And the way that you do that is by engaging, you know, all of the partners and everyone who is interested.
Who are some of the partners? Can you talk about, you know, some of the stakeholders involved in these projects?
The key to our success on these projects is our partnerships. We are not doing this alone. And developing strong partnerships and engaging experts in this process is fundamental to these projects being successful in the short term and into the long term. We work with state and federal agencies, including the Bureau of Reclamation, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and California Department of Fish and Wildlife. We work with engineers on these projects, MBK engineers and Flow West, to do the modeling and the designs. And we work with, as we mentioned before, the tribes, the Yurok tribe doing the construction, the Machupta Indian tribe in Chico, and the Kachil Dihi Band of Winton Indians in Calusa, that are contributing traditional ecological knowledge to the planning. And then various other nonprofit organizations like the Sacramento River Forum to engage landowners and the public in the project, and also American Rivers, who's helping support some of the salmon research, the monitoring in particular.
And you described for us what's going on there near Chico. Tell us about some of the other interesting places, because you have eight sites, and I'm sure each one was chosen for a specific reason. Walk us through some of the other places.
Our northernmost project is called Bonnie View Island Ranch. It's in the city of Redding, and we are working on creating a side channel through the center of the island, again, to target creating habitat for juvenile salmon. Part of that project also includes contributing some gravel to the project, to the river, in order for adult salmon to have spawning gravel to lay their eggs in.
The southernmost sites, you know, what makes those unique is that they were recently farmed. You know, they were these orchards where the farmer really wanted to get out of there because they were not making money, because it's when you're farming in the floodway, it's unpredictable, and under the current prices for nuts, it's just the math doesn't work out. And so there's a lot of farmers who are looking to, you know, sort of get out of their river properties. And they, many of them, you know, are of an age that they remember a different time when they had lots of access to rivers. And so we find it very common that these farmers are coming to River Partners and wanting to see these properties put back into habitat. And so, you know, we're going into, you know, what may have been sort of a relict old walnut orchard and taking that down and replacing it with all native trees and shrubs, and then also using construction equipment to sort of open up these side channel and floodplain reconnection opportunities.
Another interesting aspect about that occurs to me is water itself, because, you know, orchards use a lot of groundwater. Wherever you're pumping it from, either out of the river or out of the ground, you know, you're using water. Whereas when you're restoring these places, you're actually putting water back into the system.
Exactly. And we have a whole program at River Partners that focuses only on this, on water conservation. And there are many ways to conserve water. Turning off the dial on these pumps that have been running for 50 years, you know, is a great way to do that. And then there's also, you know, these evapotranspiration and different sort of different ways that you can use vegetation that use less water than whatever vegetation is currently there. And so you can not only save water by ceasing pumping out of the river, but you can save water also by changing the type of vegetation that's there.
How does that work?
All right. So there's evapotranspiration. So plants are pulling water up out of their roots, goes out to their leaves, hot sun comes down, pulls that water out into the atmosphere. And so there are plants that use much more water than other plants. And so one of the filters that we use to view our projects is the evapotranspiration rate. And what we found, we did a big study on a project in Modesto called Dos Rios Ranch. And what we found is that when you're replacing, you know, alfalfa and some other crops that grow out there, the evapotranspiration difference with the new vegetation is very high. And so you're not only saving the water that's no longer being used to irrigate that highly, you know, water intensive crop, but the water loss from the plant itself is actually quite a bit less.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes total sense to me. You know, especially when you see a monocrop like an orchard, there's not a lot going on there that would be what you would call a natural system.
Exactly. And the same, there's been lots of research going into the wildlife use of orchards, and it's just, it's minuscule. You know, if you look at the different number of bird species, for example, that are using orchards versus using native riparian forest, there's not even a comparison.
Let's take a quick break. When we return, we'll find out more about the work being done to restore salmonid habitat on the Sacramento River with River Partners scientists Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rottenham. And our producer, Matt Fidler, will go out in the field to one of their restoration sites. You won't want to miss that. And we're back. And thanks again for listening to Blue Dot. Let's return now to our conversation on restoring side channel habitats along the Sacramento River to aid our declining salmonid populations with River Partners scientists Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rottenham. Well, let's talk about, you know, what this actually looks like in terms of success. So, you know, you go into these places and you try to reconnect the natural river system, these side channels connecting, getting you back to a floodplain, floodplain reconnection, if you will. What does success look like?
Well, success for me ultimately means that we put ourselves out of business. So we need, you know, we're a nonprofit focused on bringing life back to rivers, and we need healthy rivers. We need healthy wildlife populations. You know, we need to make ourselves go away. You know, unfortunately, I don't see that happening anytime soon. And so at this point, you know, we really drill down and look at success on individual projects. And for these, it's very easy to see because you can just stick a camera in the water and you can watch the juvenile salmon coming in and feeding. On other types of projects, such as water conservation and, you know, all these other multi-benefits that are out there, the science staff at River Partners really puts a lot of time just being out on the ground, collecting data, building to long-term data sets so that we can present, you know, the exact impact that California is having by investing money in these projects.
Want to add anything, Jennifer?
Sure. Success to me is wild salmon populations thriving in the Sacramento River and across the Western United States. And to make that dream a reality depends on a whole network of people working together. It's all like one giant puzzle with different partners focused on the various needs of the salmon. And to make all those pieces fit together requires collaboration and partnership, which is a really exciting part of these projects. To me and to River Partners.
And your name is River Partners. Let's talk about some of the actual partners. For example, when you do some work on, you know, the Sacramento River, there's a large federal involvement with that river and state. Could you talk about some of the government agencies that you're involved with as partners in this?
The primary federal partners that we're working with on these projects are the Bureau of Reclamation, who operate the major dams along the Sacramento River and have a recovery strategy targeting doubling salmon populations in the Sacramento River and I believe across the Western United States. And funding projects like these is part of that strategy. They're also working in partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and also with NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. There's also state agencies, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Water Resources are key partners in the salmon strategy. Let's see, who am I forgetting, Michael?
Yeah, so Jen, you know, listed a sort of laundry list of federal and state acronyms. All the agencies are involved here. When we get funded for a project, what they're paying for is to go out and do the actual work on that piece of property. So one of the critical partners that we haven't mentioned here is when you're building these projects, it takes a tremendous amount of time to put together the coalition, to put together the team of people who are going to go out and do it, to build, you know, that trust and you know, influence in the state capital. You know, it's just, it's an incredible amount of time, and none of that is paid for. And as a nonprofit, you know, that's a really easy way to go out of business, is by doing a bunch of work that's not paid for. And so we have foundations who are particularly helpful in this regard, that give us money so that we can go out and build these projects from the ground. And then those other agencies that Jennifer mentioned, those come in and fund, you know, the dream, the vision, you know, that these foundations have helped us create.
And of course, layered on all of this is that we have a changing climate, and not for the better. You know, I was watching a presentation yesterday by the Public Policy Institute of California about water conservation, water issues, salmon were also a big part of it. And they used a projection of headlines in 2050 that were like, hey, these are the things we did right. You know, here's how it worked out. So if you could fast forward to 2050, which is really not that far away when you think about it, 25 years, if things, you know, are done right and a lot of good things happen, what are some of the things you could foresee, you know, seeing in 2050?
Well, we mentioned Battle Creek earlier as being one of the key, you know, places for this to happen on the landscape. And what I see being there in 2050 is repurposing a lot of that water, which is currently going to produce, you know, pasture for cows and to grow very water intensive crops in a dry landscape. Repurpose that into recreating the mosaic, the delta that used to exist there, by converting a lot of property that is already in public ownership, you know, reconnecting those properties to the river, so that when it floods, all of these properties go underwater, and it provides just thousands and thousands of acres for salmon at the location that they need it, at the time that they need it. And so by 2050, I certainly hope to see some big federal refuge system, or, you know, some other state or federal ownership, you know, of this big mosaic floodplain habitats, which have been recently created in the San Joaquin Valley at Dos Rios Ranch, which is the newest California state park. And so it's been documented how to do it. Now we just need to do that in a bunch of different places.
And we're about out of time, but Jennifer, you want to add to that?
I think it's an important thing to bring up that salmon are the keystone species in this river ecosystem, and they tell us a lot about the health of the river. And if they're not doing well, it's an indicator that the whole natural system is potentially in decline.
Well, Michael Rogner and Jennifer Rotnam of River Partners, thanks for spending time with us and telling us about your work. And I look forward to hearing about your tour of Indian Fishery with Matt.
Thanks for having us, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
Thank you, Dave.
And now we're joined by producer Matt Fidler. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
You visited one of the sites that Jennifer Rotnam and Michael Rogner are now doing restoration work on the Sacramento River. Where is the site that you visited?
Well, Jennifer and I met at this place just west of Chico called Indian Fisheries. And several weeks ago, after that really big rain event where we got like 8 inches of water in just 3 days, causing a lot of flooding and the river rising considerably for this short period of time, I recorded them touring me around this specific restoration site.
We are at a spot called Indian Fisheries. It's on sort of the middle stretch of the Sacramento River. So if you think about the Sacramento River, the mountain stretch kind of comes down to Red Bluff. And once you get south of Red Bluff, there's a 100-mile stretch from Red Bluff to Colusa, where the river is still able to sort of function like a river. It's not constrained by levees. And so we're in the middle of that section. This is a property that's owned by California State Parks. And it's named Indian Fisheries because the Machupta tribe used to fish here. And they're part of the project helping to, you know, reconnect the floodplain, and then also do a lot of interpretive science for, you know, based on the Machupta's knowledge of this area.
And Matt, we've talked a lot about side channel restoration in this program. Would this be considered a side channel of the Sacramento River?
Well, yes, but not exactly how you may be picturing it. So during that big rain event, the Sacramento River rose around 15 feet above its current level, flooding into this area, which is completely separated from the river now, and most of the time, except again during these big flooding events. They referred to it as an oxbow lake. Here's Jennifer.
So we're looking at an oxbow lake, which has been cut off from the river on both ends. And our goal here is to improve the salmon habitat by increasing how often the water flows into this channel, which what we're seeing is just a small part of a channel that's approximately 2 miles long.
And here again is Michael.
The pond that we're looking at, or the oxbow that we're looking at right now, is full of baby salmon right now because we had this, you know, high flows a couple weeks ago. There's probably several thousand baby salmon in there right now. The good news for them is that there's way more food in here than there is in the river. And so they're eating a lot. They're growing very fast. The water's warm. It generates these tremendous blooms of food. The bad news is that unless there's another flood that comes along and flushes this out, none of these salmon are going to survive. And so the project will reconnect this to the river to both maximize the great habitat that's already here and also sort of solve that problem of getting them back out to the river.
Ah, so if I understand it correctly, then this oxbow in the past has been sometimes, but not often, connected to the main river channel, like during these big flood events that you described. But they're going to connect it back so that when the salmon eggs hatch in these ideal fishery environments, they can make it back to the ocean.
Exactly. And Michael goes into some detail about how these little side channels lead to not just their survival downriver into the ocean, but for their survival in the ocean, so they can survive long enough to make it back and start the cycle over again.
Yeah, if you were to paint a picture of what juvenile salmon habitat looks like, you know, this is it. These sort of slow-moving water. It's heavily vegetated, which we can't see because it's all under the water, but that provides lots of places for the salmon to hide. And the amount of food that's in this water is exponentially higher than the amount of food that's in the main river channel. And so it's very easy for the fish to expend little energy because the water's not moving, so they don't have to be swimming constantly. And there's lots of food, so they grow really fast. And what determines if this fish is going to come back 3 years from now and breed somewhere in the upper watershed is largely how big is it when it gets to the Golden Gate? You know, how big is it when it gets down to the bottom end of the system? Because once it gets out in the ocean, there's all kinds of big things out there that want to eat it. And the bigger it is, the fewer things that can eat it, and the, you know, the greater its ability to survive. So one of the things that constraining rivers has done is it's made it so that juvenile fish have a really hard time getting out to the Golden Gate. And when they get there, they're very small. And so what we're trying to do is we're giving them the body size and the ability to survive the, you know, the coming 3 years so that they can come back.
It sounds like doing a project like this, it just gives you a big bang for the buck, as it were. Huge benefits for the salmon populations and the river ecosystem at large, as we heard in this interview with Jennifer and Michael earlier in our program. My question is, why isn't this happening in more places?
Well, I'm sure I don't need to explain that state funding is limited and we can't restore everywhere. At this point, they're focusing on places that are really ideal, just like this one. Not so much in places along the river where humans have invested in productive farming, for example, or communities with housing.
Where the gray area lies is how do we bring back a more dynamic river system in a place where people live, you know, and that's the hard part because you have levees that protect houses, you have levees that protect cities. And so what Sacramento is doing a pretty good job at these days is identifying these multi-benefit projects where you can increase public safety, you can increase wildlife habitat, you can, you know, increase groundwater recharge and carbon sequestration and all of these things. And they identify those projects and then they find funding to make them happen. And that's exactly, you know, how the funding comes about for a project like this is the right people in Sacramento saying, hey, this is important, we got to do this.
One of the things that I'm noticing is our projects mostly occur on the wet side of the levee in areas where farm production's been challenging due to interactions with the river, and it's been difficult to farm those areas at a profit. And so oftentimes the farmers are happy to sell their land and happy to see it move into conservation because it's not very productive as farmland.
Gosh, that brings up another topic that Michael just briefly touched upon, safety for communities along the river, how letting rivers flood and act naturally in some places like this can actually help human settlements and farms from damage by floods downriver.
Yes, and thanks for bringing that up, because ultimately, Jennifer told me this isn't just about salmon and the environment, but it's about people too. Fishing guides, professional fishers, up the river and in the oceans. This really helps the regional and statewide economy. And like you said, it also protects places down the river from catastrophic flooding during these big rain events.
I'd like there to be more education around how healthy rivers function and how rivers need space in the floodplain to be able to stretch out. The water needs space to come up onto the floodplain, both to prevent flooding further downstream, but also to create habitat for the fish and wildlife that historically have depended on those areas.
That's really interesting. Thanks for taking the time to visit the site, Matt. I wished I could have gone with you. It sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was really neat to see in person and see that this work is being done just 15 minutes away from my home in Chico.
Thanks again to our guests, John Hannon, fish biologist from the United States Department of Reclamation, and from River Partners Associate Director of Restoration Science, Michael Rogner, and Senior Restoration Ecologist and Project Manager, Jennifer Rotnam. And special thanks to our producer, Matt Fidler, for taking us out in the field to hear more about the restoration work being done at Indian Fishery on the Sacramento River near Chico, California. You can learn more about the work being done on the river at riverpartners.org. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of CAP Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schiltz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.